This is a production of Cornell University.
Meeting of the Employees Summit Order, it's February the 3rd, and it's, I'm going to say, 12:18. We'll go with a little bit of grace period in there, too. Were there any other...
Sorry.
We just exploded. were there any other additions to the agenda that we had?
The one thing I would ask then, I know Gina had mentioned, she's like, well, it's time to introduce some new staff.
I just want to take a moment and introduce David Brooks, who is a familiar face to many of you, has sat on the Employee Assembly for several sessions, I guess, and was a former vice chair, and is now our administrative assistant in the Office of the Center. So, David has joined us Monday, so he's very, very fresh. And for all the reasons that he was a big part of the EA, we're looking forward to sort of skimming that cream off the top for the Office of the Assemblies and already doing some good work in our organization of restructuring, reimagination of what we're doing in the office. So I just wanted to introduce David, reintroduce him again. I invite you to welcome him as you would, any of the kinds of things that you might have previously sent to Amy. I think for the interim, I'd ask you to continue sending things to assembly@cornell.edu. David is in the curator of that box, but that way we'll both have eyes on things while we're getting, while David is transitioning. Soon thereafter, David's forgotten. and then just another note, too. We're still trying to work with our new partners. We're working at our caterer this spring is Mandible up in Cal. Cal. And any comments and suggestions, I've tried to feedback to them. Today you'll notice we do have a compost bag. Please use that for all the compostable ware, which is just about everything that you have, even the plastic cups, I think, are compostable. If not, we're going to recycle them. Thank you. That's all I have. David, do you
have anything to say? No, I'm just really, really, really looking forward to this. I know it's an awesome, for me, opportunity to be able to really focus on the assembly, like, just full time. I think it's great from a new, totally different support angle, and I was really excited about it.
Yay.
Yay.
Well, welcome back, David.
Yay! all right, so again, great to see you. Thank you.
Staff here and David helping us back out, so great. So I'd like to move on to business of, we don't have minutes to approve from the last meeting since it was kind of an executive session for us, but were there any outstanding things that we saw with other minutes, anything like that? Great. Moving down to business of the day. First item here is we have a guest, Linda Kroll Held, who is familiar to some of you as well here. I'm discussing our proposed resolution on amending the EEO supplement on the application for employment. So I'd ask Linda to say hello and take it away.
So hi, many of your faces are familiar, although not all of your faces are familiar. Because I was in the assembly for 6 years and this is my first year off. So glad to be back. I feel very deja vu-ish sitting here for all those years. So I did see a copy of the resolution that you had put forth. And the first question I have is, ultimately, what ultimately are you hoping to accomplish by asking for this? Is the first question that I have. And the reason I ask that is because I want to kind of, if I'm correct on that, I want to share kind of my perspective on the how it's being asked and how maybe we could do it just slightly different and the reason why. So the first question I have is if you can just explain to me kind of the spirit of the resolution, that would be very helpful to me to make sure I'm interpreting it right.
Sure, so I could start out with that. These were presented to us as a way to kind of look at kind of engaging our different constituents. But I think for us it's a process of how do we help the group kind of look at how the resolution process works. And using some of these as kind of examples as a starting point. So I wouldn't say that it's necessarily, there's no EA sponsor for it yet, so it's not necessarily already a presented resolution. But for us, it was a starting point of here's a community member with something that they're working on. How do we work through the resolution process as a way that we can share governance in this process as a whole?
Okay, so I was wondering if in terms of the collecting data aspect of it, if there is an objective around the data you're collecting.
Is there any more copies of the resolution?
If somebody wants a copy,
you
look at it after hours. So essentially, Brian and I have discussed for a while how we can better understand the demographics of the community, understanding that, I think, actually we were just talking about this, given that the regulatory climate has changed, or the regulatory landscape has changed, and now that is influencing a lot of people socially, so a lot more people are a lot more comfortable self-identifying in a lot of different ways. And so in order for us to better understand what our population actually looks like, not only the population that's here, but also the population, the prospective population, who's actually trying to come into the institution. So Brian had a whole, there's a consortium that they have some best practices, and actually the language is pulled from the consortium for what to ask. They looked at putting it, actually most people have debt memos. A lot of institutions that actually put that on their admissions application now, on their second one. The essay, I want to say? The essay or the GPSA, one of them has already put forth this resolution for admissions.
Put forth this
in terms of acting on the admissions application. I think we were just trying to be consistent. But I think that the ultimate goal is to understand the prospective population that's coming in and long-term to understand the population that's actually here. For us, of course, in the action plan, to be able to see different stages of hiring, making a buy, all those types of stuff. But I think it's up for discussion.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'll add along that too. Again, I think for me, and I think a lot of the other long-term members on this, it's how do we start looking at resolutions, not necessarily like punitive things, which I think people typically see resolutions as, it's always a negative. It's how do we use the resolution process as a mechanism to figure out what's happening at the university and how we can start to like make a formalized process to see that happen as well too. So I would say it's a partnership, and so it's an ask from the community, and how do we engage the specific staff groups that are charged with these things in terms of understanding what the information is.
Right. Okay. And this is not a finished product.
Yeah.
It's not even fully drafted. There is.
Okay.
This is important.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's part of a process. So I guess just from my experience on the EA, I always felt that the resolution was really a tool to use when you couldn't get the engagement of the respective parties that you would like to consider a change or consider something like that, because typically you announce it to the president, right? And then the president then asks the party why, you know, what's going on, can we do this? And, you know, there's one of two reasons why you may not have gotten earlier engagement. It might be the group just doesn't want to change whatever it is, so you want kind of that executive power to be able to get them to reevaluate. Or it could be a resourcing thing. You could ask a group and say, we'd really like to do this, and the group says, we'd like to, but we can't afford it. So then if it goes through the president, then the president may say, this is really important. The university will help find funding so that this thing can happen, right? So from my standpoint, that's the way I've always viewed the resolution process. What I'd like to say is, temporarily, I'm the person who's advocating for the EEO data on campus, in the office, and I'm very willing to work with you guys on this, so I don't think it necessarily has to be a resolution that would go through the president at this point. So I'll just put that out there to share that with you, but I think it was a good way to engage me and let me know what your issues were. So I want to share with you two things on this, and I don't know if a piece of it could perhaps be off the record.
so we'll go into the second discussion.
Yeah, so we'll go, I can just start by framing. So
before you do that, are there any objections to going to
kind of off the record, and I'm trusting you as a group of my peers to be very open with you about some things.
All right. Pause this for a moment. Alright, there we go.
I was
I would like to lean on the side of knowing we have a problem. That is my opinion, rather than not asking so that, you know, and I totally get that having a statistical issue might be a problem that we may have a false positive, like, you know. But if there's no other way to know that we have a problem, then I would want to know so that we can fix it.
And the other piece is I'm really concerned if we're even going to have people, you know, weighing out risk. If I knew 100% of the people identified in the astronaut, in the candidate form, then I'd say it's worth the risk. When I don't think that that's at all the case, I think that a lot of candidates don't reveal a lot about themselves except for their qualifications and they're qualified to do the job, which is important. I don't know that it would be even accurate data to even be looked at because I think there's a large number of people who don't.
Right. The resolution includes, maybe we can talk specifically about at what point is information together. It's not necessarily
And I think you'll get a higher response rate at that point, too, just based on what we see in terms of applicant responses versus when someone's hired, that changes, in many cases, something that they said. So I think you'll get a higher, more accurate response rate once someone has an offer in hand.
And once you report the information, you report the response rate as well, right?
It depends on what part. At that part of time, no, we don't report the response rate. But they don't ask for that in candidate pools. They don't ask for it. They ask for it when we do our overall just for the Section 503, which is the individuals with disabilities.
Right.
That's the only place that they ask what response rate is, and that has a bearing. Other than that, they don't care about response rate.
Right, but we could, like the grant or an audit.
So Jeremy, Michelle, and sorry.
So my question then is, if we have to have a problem with hiring people, for getting offers to people whose gender identity is questionable and that is sometimes visibly obvious, how do we know that? How do we find out that that's a problem and how do we address that? Without asking these questions, without providing the opportunity for self-identification to show that we have that problem, how are we going to know?
Well, I think one of the challenges is the data that we would, in asking, we wouldn't necessarily know it was a problem because the person was identified.
But
so then you only get a few
That's a supposition, and the same can be applied to any of the questions that are asked during that hiring process. So I don't see there's any difference in any of the other questions that are asked. If we had the chance to avoid asking any questions at hiring, we choose to not ask any of them. Because that's the same question.
Right.
I don't expect an answer at this point because obviously you can't. But that's where I'm getting hung up here.
Right.
We're choosing then this class of person to not ask the question of because we're afraid they might not answer. But does that hold true then with every other question that we ask during that process? Does it have the same lack of value as all of those other questions? Because it is the same and it needs to be addressed the same.
Well, some of the questions are validatable, I guess, to some degree. So, for example, legal gender. when somebody is hired? I mean, I guess you don't necessarily know that when someone self-identifies in the applicant process. Those are more validatable. The other thing that concerns me, and you know, you can argue both sides of this, I think there'll be applicants that will feel, will be very happy and excited that Cornell's asking the questions during the interview process. The other questions that we ask any federal contractor that they go to, they're going to get the exact same questions. So people who are filling out employment applications are pretty accustomed to getting the other questions because there's a ton of federal contractors all across the country. So they're accustomed to getting those questions. There'll be those who will see that question and feel very nervous and uncomfortable because they've never seen that question. There'll be those who will be happy and excited and saying, Cornell, this is great that Cornell's asking it. There'll be the others that will question it and ask why we're asking it when they know it's not one of the standard questions that are required to be asked as per federal contract requirements. So you've got both sides of those from an applicant standpoint. And I think it could be argued both ways on how an individual is feeling when they come up to fill out an application for us. And, you know, no two individuals are the same in how they may feel about that.
I'm going to go Michelle, Marie, and then Gina.
When we're undergoing an audit or if there's a risk that they find something bad, as consistent with the staff for the greater good, what could happen? I mean, are they going to cut our federal funding? Are they going to put a freeze on hiring? And then that's not in the best interest of any of the employees that we're bringing on or that we currently have.
Right.
And kind of akin to safety audits and dealing with OSHA and stuff like that. When you have an audit, of course you don't want to be in an unsafe environment or anything like that, but you're told not to offer information. You know, some people, including federal employees, have to justify their employment and find something. So you may not want to give them some extra date until, you know, in the application process. And I see the application process as being more of a blind pool at that point. And then once the offer is made, not having a problem with.
Right. That's where I am. It's honestly really new territory. This is really, really new. I had to research to find out what the point of view would be from RCCC around it. And it took me a while to find what they said is, you know, federal contractors are not required to collect this information. However, if they do collect it, then we do want it during an audit. You have to offer it during an audit. That it took me a while to find it because it's new territory. So there's not even cases out there that I can look at to say what they'll do with the information, how what they would do if they found, because there's not right now with we have affirmative action goals for women, racial ethnic minorities, for veterans, and for individuals with disabilities. There are goals out there. There are not goals currently for that population, those populations. And so we're really not sure how they'll handle it. And that makes us a little nervous. I can tell you that if they find something that they're concerned about in any of those other areas, that yes, it could become some sort of a big thing we would have to do. You know, there's all different things, punitive, there's dollar amounts and everything they can go after employers for. Sometimes they're justified, sometimes they're not, but it can be years in the courts, it can be, you know, hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars, suspending grants, it can be all those kinds of things. This is just new territory for us, so we don't even know. I don't know if you've seen anything.
And Lynn and I are part of the same department, so this is not some like when we were initially looking at this, that was the big question. So when Lynette was here, we were that kind of wanted an action plan for this particular population. You know, are we a little difficult to do that because we don't know what the population looks like in order to complete action plan. So yes, there are some steps we could take, which is what started with the workday thing, to figure out what, at least we can ask what our current population looks like. But all the OCC guidance for the regulations, all it says is, you know, it's a question in the FAQ that they put. It's like, are federal contractors now required to collect this information? And their answer is no. But if you know you're not required to, we don't discourage you from doing it. And if you do collect it, then just turn it over during an audit. I think my thing is, even if they found something, even if they saw the numbers and found that in their mind something was deficient or something was functional, there's not really anything they can actually set against it. And it's like, meaning like, what regulation they're going to point to, because they've been operating guidance on it. Okay. So I don't necessarily see that as an obstacle to try to say, well, hey, this institution actually tried and actually started collecting information and now they know something. The initial draft of the regulation actually did include a provision that people were supposed to collect information. It was stricken from it because people were unsure about how to calculate the utilization goal,
yeah.
The same and as much the same as we do for veterans and individuals with disabilities, because nobody's ever attempted to collect information before. So that's the thing. So I think most people kind of at least most of the articles and stuff that are out now are speculating that in the next year, so they will release some sort of guidance or some regulation about collecting that information. I would love to be ahead of the curve, and I actually don't mind if we're asking a post offer. I don't mind that at all. I just would like that I'm trying to start getting up on the path so we can, we actually are much better at assessing what our population is in these different areas,
yeah.
As opposed to when they do decide to come down with something, now we're just driving blind and everybody starts to scramble it, because in much the way the government likes to do, it'll come down in May, and they'll say, have this by July 1,
yeah.
and we're going to be in a panic. We're going to ask them, and we're going to have a conversation all over again.
Marie, and then Gina, and Linda.
My question is, if someone goes into Workday, say they've been working here for a while, and they feel comfortable, you know, things have changed, and they want to go in and self-identify, does it ring a bell for someone somewhere? In other words, so you don't really know if people who are currently working here are not going in and saying,
what we can do is, all this information is stored in Workday, but there's security behind it. And that's what I think makes people nervous. So our department, because you know, we're a custody department and everything, has the reporting access rights. So we do monitor, I don't think we've done one yet, those two new options. It's in a spring called Personal, so if any of you go to Workday, go into Personal. But managers don't have access to that screen on many of the employees. You do on your own. You can go on and look on Workday Personal. And in terms of reporting ability, you know, only our department, it's a very high level of security, and within Workday, honey, you can attest to this. We're the only ones who can really run the reports on that to see that information. So we can take a look at where it was, you know, early on when we first asked, and we can take a look, you know, a month later or 2 months later and see if that's changed at all. So that's how we've been monitoring some of the other areas. I love the idea, honestly, of doing it right upon somebody receiving an offer. I think it's a fantastic idea. I think it's probably one of our most receptive times for someone to go on. I think when we do the asks with current employees, you get a lot less response. So I think at that point, I think it's like if we're going to ask, it's one of the best times to ask people, where I think we'll get the highest response rate. So I'm very much strongly encouraging that. The other piece that we'll have to check into, and maybe we look at doing it in a phased way, is just in terms of Workday and that being able to be added to the recruit, we're in the process of putting in the recruiting system at that point. With the other one, in terms of the ask, it's kind of a home-built system that then feeds into Workday, and that's why we can really easily add it at that point. I could call Peter tomorrow and say, this is the wording, can you just add this to the end of the survey and he can have it done relatively quickly. So we can do that relatively quickly. It would just be the other piece. You know, maybe the conversation needs to go in the person who's going to be in charge of this, because I'm probably not going to be in charge of this for more than maybe another month and a half. When that person starts, really let that person engaged, because at the end of the day, they're the one who's going to have to show me on or not me. But I'm just trying to, you know, to just say this is something that we want to think about. You know, and maybe it is worth it. Maybe it is worth the risk, and that would really be for that person. But I just wanted to put it out there to say, maybe our first step is let's put it in immediately, see what kind of response we get, we can track that, see what kind of response we get at that point in time, and then look as we're putting in the new, because I don't even know that we can do it for at least another several months.
Recruitment comes in April.
In April, it goes into test, and I don't know what if they've gotten that built in as a standard question to ask.
The current questions or the proposed new?
The proposed.
So they don't have anything built in there, though I've talked to our configuration team, and it's something that they believe they can do. It won't be on the official page where the questions that you have to ask are. It'll be a next page from that, because we can't modify that page, Workday's limitation, that that's a standard page for everyone across, everyone who uses Workday, so we would add our own second page to that that would have these pieces.
I would want it to be separate from that.
Yeah.
So that people know that it's something that we want to know as an employer and that we're doing that on our own. So
it is doable.
You know, this was actually a very rich conversation because you really gave me other things to think about and present. So I really, really appreciate that. You know, ultimately, as I said, I'm in this interim role. I just got moved out of my role to do this temporarily, and I think that's when the new person who comes in, you know, really should continue to engage it. I think, if, you know, from the short term, we can look at putting that in relatively immediately. I've spoken with several people about that, and I think people are on board with doing something relatively immediately in the after someone receives a hire ask. And then we can look into that other piece, and like I said, I think you guys presented a lot of really good points that I'd like to put into the consideration for the new person coming in. So,
because I can't remember, the president's response to the essay one was that they would keep it convening to actually look at putting it on the admissions application. Mm-hmm. She was in the affirmative on that.
Yeah.
And that's not required anywhere, FYI.
Yeah.
So they are going to move forward with that on the admissions application, and I just don't know which year, which round. I don't think it's about the upcoming cycle.
Yeah.
I just want to be mindful of your time. Do you have time for, I have a few more folks that have questions. Do you have time for some more questions?
I was planning on staying. Yeah, but I plan to be here for the whole time.
Great.
Yeah.
So I had Linda next.
I think for me, I was echoing some of the concerns that have been brought up about just being concerned. I hear concern around the table to check. But my thing is, if they see the need for the problem and they dig deeper, I'm assuming or I'm hoping that Cornell a fair and strive to, you know, for the well-being of the children. And so if that's the spirit of whatever process Cornell has done, even if they dig deeper, you can give justifiable answers. So again, I consult with my colleagues about asking the questions anyway. And I know there's a bit of concern also around the response rate. And I, with that one, I think about my job. And sometimes you say, we don't expect 100%. But if only two people that needed to reach responded, then maybe we ask on it. And if you're asking this question to be supportive or provide services, because that's another angle when we say, want this information so we know what we have and so we know how to take care of you. So if today 2% answer, and they see that because they answered, now there's this extra care, then it encourages the community to, oh, they really are looking to help. And so maybe next time 10%. So us deciding not to ask, then just say in that case, we don't know. Mm-hmm. But we have to take the risk and ask the questions. And if it's 2% today, maybe next day we'll go to 3 or 4. But when people see then it's not harmful, they're looking at practice, then people feel encouraged to do it. If you go back to work day, you see, oh, somebody told me they declared and nothing happened, you can't take services, people will go back and help you there. So when people see the intention and the reaction, then they do. And then on the question of when is a good time, I do understand that concern of asking when you're hiring, because it looks like maybe this is the reason that you're hiring and open it up to law. But we can think about onboarding as a good time, or orientation. That's a good time to ask the question so that we get the answers. And maybe a different way that we can do that is when we ask these questions, have links to those questions. Or if this is how you identify as a good, you may want to look at ABC, the Women of Color Policy Network. You may want to look at the LGBT, you know, so that when they look at that, it's not, oh, I don't know what the women's group is.
Right.
Oh, look, Cornell has really supported this for whatever they identify.
Right.
And so the caring well-being angle comes in rather than, because a lot of times with the fear and holding back,
what I'm hearing, and I know maybe that's not all the reason, but listening to you, some of this then becomes a concern around. They're just doing it because federal has access to it. Or they're just trying to fulfill numbers and quotas. And then that gets to police representatives when people don't get to the state.
Yeah, we got some, not a lot, but we did get some very upset people who responded when we sent out the one across the university for people to saying, why are you asking this, and blah, blah, blah. So there will be that element that, you know, it, like I said, it's a very individual thing in terms of what people feel. So I do think, though, at orientation stage, because when you provision your net ID, when you give them an offer, that starts you into the whole onboarding process. Mm-hmm. I think that's a perfect time. And like I said, that's something I think we could do really easily and pretty quickly, because that's not a system that we just use, and then we already have the fields and Workday for it to go download into. So I think the main question is, you know, can we and should we at that other point in time, and like I said, I can see both sides, because there'll be the applicants that'll be like, this is like amazing that Cornell is asking in here. There'll be the others that say, why are they asking? Are they going to use this against me? I know that they're not supposed to be or not required to ask this question. Why are they asking this and ask what they
more, you know, and I'm very open to looking at that a little bit more in talking with some other people about it to see. I mean, I think the Workday piece we have to think about. But what I think what I really want to communicate is I really want to work with you on this, so I don't feel like you need to. Sometimes when the notes go up too, it's kind of like a this group isn't working with me feeling, honestly, you know, and having been on the back end of, you know, you don't know, it goes to the president, and then the president always hands it off to the respective vice president or dean or whoever, and says, you know, what is this giving me the background, da 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 da, that's the back end of resolution. And, you know, and sometimes it feels like it's because the group wouldn't work with them and get through that was put through. And I just want to say that we are very willing to work.
Yeah.
You know, Ulysses is on the team, and on the team in inclusion, workforce diversity. So really trying to push it ahead. And I can tell you right now, we'll look into trying to do the piece after someone receives an offer right away, and then we can explore what it'll take to do the second piece of it. And I look at you, Tanya, because I think there's a big element of it that's going to be Workday hire contingent. In how we're going to word that on Workday, and also, you know, just making sure running it by a few more people that we probably want to run it by council, just in case. I think, Linda, you had mentioned the risk that you have of somebody who fills it out and then says, I wasn't even called in for an interview because I answered this in the affirmative. You know, that's something that our council's office will have to weigh in on their feeling around that, around risk. The reality is, it may come very soon that we have to do it anyway, and maybe it is 50 ahead of us. So,
go ahead, Billy and Liz. But I just wanted to reiterate that, yeah, I mean, I look at this as definitely a communications vessel and how do we work with you through a resolution, because when a resolution is passed, it does go to the president, but I think there's language we can put in, so then it's included in EA update that this is something that we work together with this team and showing that, you know, to the broad staff community, look, this was something that we worked on together, and now because they're partnering with shared governance, it's elevated to the entire staff community as something that's successful.
Right, that's something that's important.
If I may comment too, I'm sorry to interrupt, on the idea of the resolution. It's very important to remember, those of you particularly who have been on the EA for a long time, we have a new administration, and our new president doesn't have any of the perceptions that are being brought forth right now. Resolutions that are brought forth are, these are initiatives, these are important things, you're the voice of the community, bring them forth, and then put together the team to make them happen, or she'll say no. But it is not, I think, I would encourage everybody to think about the resolution process very, very differently, very constructively, very positively, less as a burden, less as a punitive measure, absolutely more as something that is constructive and bringing the voice of the community together on important issues.
Says Billion and Liz. So as the chair of the, as the vice chair of the LGBTQ colleague network group, is there a mechanism for when those people self-identify, if in that process after, you know, after they get the offer, they get the net ID, and then you're going to ask that question. If they self-identify, is there a way to set up something in a system that automatically pings them and sends them an email? You know, we noticed you self-identified this way. No, you can't do that?
We tried that before. It got blasted for it. But what we can do is the link. And so we can't push to them in terms of taking that information and then sending them out something like that. But we can say, you know, here's some resources, and we can
include a lot of resources.
We can bring them to a resource page. We can give them a link. That we can do. We just, like I said, we tried that. And it was just such an honorable thing that one unit wanted to do around veterans. And it really backfired. So, you know, like I said, you get different individuals who have very different feelings about how they want that information used, so we have to be very protective of it. And that's why, but we can, at that point in time, say, you know, here are some resources. If you're interested, click here, and you'll get put on the listserv, that kind of thing. We can totally do that.
But that's what I'm talking about. And it's not, like, so if they identify as LGBT,
yeah.
In that same screen, it says, just so you know, there are these services here. That's what I'm getting at, not like, that's what I mean by ping, not like sending an email, but is that set up that way?
Yes,
that's great.
We can totally do that, and I think, if I remember correctly, when we did the self-identification survey for individuals with disabilities, we did add a paragraph, too, about the Disability Colony Network group and some resources in that email, so we can totally do that, you know, and I think it would be a fantastic, a lost opportunity not to do that.
Great. I'm just
know what communities and more that they can connect in with if they want.
As I'm always trying to encourage my colleagues who are LGBTQ to sign up for this, most of them aren't. I know.
It's not necessarily true, Liz. And then
Michelle. She was laughing because I made you. Yeah, I think you go on the HR website.
Okay.
If you go on the HR website, there's links for all the colleague network groups.
Okay.
And Aaron,
Summer
Chase. Yes. Yeah, I went to school with her since first grade. from the same hometown.
Awesome.
I believe she's the vice chair of that.
Yeah,
she is. And Mikhail, and then Jane, do you have a question?
In Workday, we have your legal gender and your preferred gender.
Yes, right.
So I would imagine we would mimic that same thing in the recruitment piece.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things we ask OCCP around that, because we're required to report on composition by gender. And we said, if we're going to start collecting people's preferred gender, how does that play out? And that we were like, oh, that's a really good question. Because they don't currently have it. Now, the reason that we have it there, and you know, this shows just how backward some systems currently are that we may not necessarily, is there things around insurance and stuff like that requires legal gender that we have to collect? So there's that piece of things, and you know, hopefully that'll change over time, but right now there's other reasons why we need it for data collection, and hopefully if OCCP, you know, gets more with the time,
then they'll allow us to have preferred gender as what we report on, not legal gender.
Right.
And right now it's legal gender. So we're, you know, we put that out there to them to say we want to start collecting this when we did the initial outreach to the community, and how should we then start reporting on it? And we're like, we don't know.
Thank you. So again, this to me is a really positive step in what we're trying to do with these resolutions, is how do we bring issues forward and work proactively with these staff departments so they're elevated at a university-wide level. From this discussion, are there folks here that are interested in working with Linda and answering some of these questions and working on a resolution of some kind? See, Mikhail?
Yeah.
And us, and Liz?
Yeah. Okay. And I have to say, I was in the EA for 6 years, and this was one of the most dynamic, great conversations.
Mm-hmm.
That I remember being at
cool.
the game. I really appreciate. I think you guys were very thoughtful in what you said and discussing your concerns. And so I really appreciate the open dialogue in your ideas and thoughts.
Cool. Thank you, Linda.
Yeah, thank
So we have about, like, that clock's a little ahead, so we have about 15 minutes. I just want to cover two major things before we kind of reconvene here. First, building off of this, this to me is a big example of what we can do with the issues that you're facing as staff members, and this is a big reason why we're restructuring to begin with. So every single staff member is represented in some way, and that when these things come up, there is someone at this table that can bring these issues to the assembly as a whole. So I ask each of you to start thinking about how this conversation went, who you represent as staff members, and how you can connect with the executive committee to bring something up at our next EA meeting, where we can, again, contact a staff person ahead of time so they can come and be a knowledgeable expert, so we can ask some questions, so we can figure out what our next steps might be. So again, please, everyone, come back. I ask that we all think of at least one thing. I'm sure you all have one thing that is troubling you or is concerning you or you want to bring to, you know, a higher perspective at the university. That's why you're EA members. That's why you have this opportunity. So please, one thing. You can all do one thing.
And I'll just add to that, because we probably won't have time to talk about it, but the other two outstanding resolutions that we have here that were initially brought to us by Ulysses, we're working on getting Paul Bursick here at our next meeting so that we can have the same kind of conversation with him on those two resolutions.
I have an update on the resolution that I said I would work
sure.
on about the work release time for fitness and health. I have a meeting tomorrow with Beth McKinney and Carrie
great.
To talk about historical and what's happening at different colleges now.
Cool.
So to better frame it and to figure out a better idea of how we can put it together, because I'm a realist. I don't believe that, you know, Cal specifically is going to all of a sudden change their stance. But if we can come up with some
yep.
creative solutions that maybe they could implement to help with that. So.
That's great.
Things
are
Bell has offered to help.
I love it. Things are happening. The last two updates I had, I'm not going to talk about them in detail, but the restructuring points that we came up from our last meeting, they were printed out and they're also available in box. So please pick those up and let me know if you have questions about those as we figure out our meetings. And do we have any other updates on assigning those, or are we just going to send out to the family?
So thank you to everyone who put their choices in for who they'd be comfortable talking with. My goal is to finish either partnering people up or sending out individuals, depending on, you know, if we have more than one person. I hope to have that out, that list out to everybody by Friday, so that you can start thinking about your meetings. And I don't know if we want to draft some sort of one voice email that we would each send to whomever our contact is, so that we're all sending the same message. So I don't know if that's something
that
exec can work on, and Gina can wordsmith for us because she's so awesome at doing that.
Another infographic.
I was going to say, the infographic was pretty great. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Yeah, I said we should do an
infographic.
Any other questions about those talking points that we have on there? Great. The last thing I had, just a quick report from the chair. We still have the vice chair for internal operations position, so I'm looking at doing that at our next EA meeting, so that'll be in 2 weeks. Again, same procedure as the last. Connect with Tanya or myself, anyone on the exec, if you have a nomination, and we'll do that at our next meeting. And then my other... Oh, yes, the Board of Trustees meeting, and we have a reception with the Executive Committee on March 22nd from 4 to 5 p.m. That is Giving Day, so I know if you work in Alumni Affairs and Development, that might take up some of your time. I might be gone that whole day, so we're looking at potentially moving either the time or potentially the date. I don't know if that'll happen, but the tentative date, so at least I'll have it now, is March the 22nd, 4 to 5 p.m. Again, a great opportunity for us to talk to the Board of Trustees about what we're doing, why this work is important, and how it's actually making an impact on staff as this place goes into transition. That's all I had. Were there any other questions, updates, Billy and Michelle?
I was going to ask Linda if she would be our February spokesmodel for our EA update. So basically what I need is a headshot and a brief bio and why you want to serve. Do you mind being the next one? Great.
Billy using the tactics I have here.
I've just decided to ask people one by
one.
With enlarging the EA constituency, I just wanted to make sure that it was budgeted, that either we haven't used enough money historically or that we would be allowed to have enough money to have a larger group.
Yeah.
Whatever that may entail.
A budget report from at Pilar wasn't able to come today, but yeah, I mean, we can do that next meeting. Great. Other questions at all?
Yeah.
Thanks so much. Thanks, everyone. Again, I appreciate everyone's work on this. Please come over the next few days, start putting your ideas into the box so the exec can start looking at next week and who we can invite, all those things as well for next meeting. Thank you, everyone.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.